Some things shouldn't be transparent, like stop signs. But what you pay for should always be clear, like Hiller's True Transparency Pricing. Always clearly itemized and never any hidden fees. Because you have the right to know what you're paying for. For more information, visit happyhiller.com/true transparency pricing. Happy you'll be, or the service is free.
Call the Happy Face Truck today.
From 104.5 The Zone, this is the Midday 180, served up by Wendy's. With Jonathan Hutton, Chad Withrow, and Paul Kuharski.
Midday 180, served up by Wendy's. With Chad Withrow and Paul Kuharski, I'm Jonathan Hutton. Morgan Alexander is in for David Reed today as the chairman of the board. Appreciate his hard work. Coming up in 45 minutes at 12:50, Austin Price of AllQuest.com. In studio with us now, a Super Bowl champion, former New Orleans Saints wide receiver Lance Moore, in studio with us. He's in Nashville for the camp that George Whitfield was telling us about yesterday that's going on at Montgomery Bell Academy. And it's good to have Lance in studio with us running the receiver aspect of that camp. Good to see you, man.
Got it.
Thanks so much for stopping in. So how did you meet George Whitfield? I know you live in the same city, but it goes further than that, right?
Well, yeah, it does. I mean, I've known who he was for years, but I had never met him until probably 4 months ago. And I happened to be working out at a high school locally in San Diego. And James Lofton, you know, Hall of Fame receiver, trains there sometimes. I run into him. He said, "Hey, man, I've got a number of a guy that I think that you should meet." So I'm like, "Okay, yeah, for sure." I mean, I'm always looking for more opportunities. And he said, "You know, you heard the name George Whitfield." And I'm thinking, I'm like, "Yeah." And the first person I thought of was Johnny Manziel. But then I'm thinking, okay, I believe he trained Jameis Winston. I believe he trained Cam Newton. And then I meet him and he's like, "Look, I'm a quarterback guy. You're a receiver guy. Let's get together. Let's make something happen." And I'm like, "Yes, perfect." I mean, and it's kind of like a match made in heaven. And to be able to get to work with somebody that's so passionate about the quarterback position, kind of the way that I'm passionate about the wide receiver position, it just makes too much sense.
It's incredible. We had George in yesterday, and he's such a technician about everything. I mean, he calls himself a quarterback engineer, and that's the way he sounds when he's talking about the position and how to play it. Are you that way? I mean, you had a long NFL career, but when you're discussing or training receivers out there, do you look at it almost like a scientist would look at something and how to build a receiver?
Well, yeah, absolutely. I mean, you mentioned technician. And if you don't have the technical aspect of the position, then all the other stuff doesn't matter. I mean, you have to build a foundation that's developed with fundamentals so that you have what it takes to expand upon just somebody being really big, really fast, really athletic. I mean, if you can do the fundamental things well, then, you know, those are the things obviously you can improve on. So as a small receiver like myself, I wasn't going to do any drills or anything that was going to make me taller. You know what I mean? So being able to do the technical things in receiver play, and it's not just about route running and catching touchdowns. I mean, there's so many different levels to what you do as a wide receiver. And yeah, absolutely. I mean, we're on the same page with that one for sure.
Your signature moment, probably, correct me if I'm wrong, rolling, reaching, two-point conversion in the Super Bowl. Maybe it wouldn't have been a catch under today's rules.
You sure about that?
I'm asking you. What do you think?
Honestly,
do you even know? Because we don't.
I do a little bit of radio myself. Work for SiriusXM NFL Radio during the season, and literally, I mean, I've only worked there for one season, but you know, the last two or three years at least, the catch rule has been so annoying. And every single week, there's going to be at least one situation where it comes up. What is a catch? And people call in and ask. My co-host is always asking, "You're the wide receiver guy. Tell me what a catch is." And my understanding, at least with the new rule change now,
seems like they're fixing it. Hopefully,
well, but I just feel like they could simplify it and help everybody out. Right, a catch. If I toss you this Gatorade bottle and you catch it and it doesn't hit the floor, that's a catch. Right, it doesn't matter what happens from that point. If somebody pushes you down and that ball moves a little bit. Did you not just catch the ball or catch the bottle that I threw you? I think they could make it even more simple than what it is now. Because now they're saying catch the ball and make a football move. So then what is a football move? They said you can take a step, you can lunge forward, and I think there's one other thing. But I'm like, okay, you're still you're making it a little more simple, but you're still making it complicated. And in my opinion, there's two things that there have to be. With the rule, it's got to be clear. There's got to be clarity. What exactly is the rule? Okay, so you told me that I have to make a football move after I catch the ball. But then there also has to be consistency in how that rule is interpreted and how the referees are implementing it in the game and how the replay officials in New York are going to be giving these referees, because the final decision is in New York these days. It's not the officials that are on the field. They've tried to take a little bit of the pressure away from the officials, which I understand that, but you know, I think it should be black and white. There's still some gray area in the rule. And until they make it black and white, which I don't know why they wouldn't, but until they do it, we're still going to be having this conversation.
But your conversion's a catch under any gray rule, even, you think?
I would say it should be a catch, because if you watch the play, the defender kicks the ball out of my hand. So, you know, I maintained possession until it was kicked out of my hand. And in today's rules, as soon as you maintain or as soon as you have possession across the goal line, it's a touchdown. So I don't really know, but I you know, of course, I like to say, yeah, sure, it's a touchdown. But the 2C, I call it the 2Cs, consistency on the rule and clarity in which it's interpreted.
And I like the simplicity angle you're going with there. The one issue would be catch fumble.
Yep.
Right. I mean, that's the one where there has to be a little bit of a definition and maybe some gray area. And okay, did they really catch it, or did they catch it, start to turn upfield, get hit, and it's an incomplete pass, or was it a hit and a fumble? Well, how do you solve that issue? Right. And does that even happen enough to warrant it being a big part of this?
Well, I mean, I think about, you know, the ball not being able to move thing. High school football doesn't have a replay. So if a kid catches a ball and he falls down and that ball might possibly move a few inches in his hands while he's on the ground, they're still going to call it a catch.
Yeah.
So why can't we do that in the NFL? I don't understand that. They say that the ground cannot cause a fumble. So if you catch it and you get hit and you're falling to the ground and the ball happens to move, it shouldn't be a fumble. You should just be down right there. So obviously if you catch a ball and you fall down on your own without being contacted and the ball moves or the ball comes out, then that in the NFL should be a fumble.
Lance Moore is in studio with us. We're going to get into some more aspects of the wide receiver position with Lance as we move forward. And Paul, you have another direction to go.
Yes. Once upon a time, Lance Moore's celebration dance got him flagged, and I'm guessing fined. It also got him on a TV show. We'll talk to him about that next.
Lance Moore with us in studio, Midday 180, served up by Wendy's.
I want to tell you a story about someone who decided they were going to do something and they went about doing it regardless of the risk. That person is Ryan Kelly, the home loan expert. This was a guy that 10 years ago, wife was pregnant, decided he wanted to start his own business. He went door to door and turned a small business into a huge success story with the home loan expert. Those experiences of going door to door and meeting with different people, sitting down in their kitchen, talking about their stories has really helped Ryan. Now he's getting offered teaching positions in marketing and entrepreneurship. Ryan's a guy who doesn't have a college degree. That's what he was able to create with the home loan expert. That's why with Ryan, it's all about hard work, and it's all about finding out what your situation is, knowing that he's going to get you into the right spot, whether that be a cash out refinance, whether that be purchasing a home, and I'm going to talk a lot about the different options with Ryan Kelly as well. He's going to get you in that right spot. He started from scratch. He knows what it's like to struggle. He can help you get out of whatever situation you're in. Ryan Kelly and the Home Loan Expert team, they work hard, so you don't have to. If you're looking to refinance or purchase a home, why would you go anywhere else? Call Ryan right now at 615-810-8555 or visit thehomeloanexpert.com.
Know when we're giving away our next big prize? Well, you would if you were a Zone MVP. Sign up at 1045thezone.com.
Midday 180 served up by Wendy's. Lance Moore, former NFL wideout, 11 years in the league, I believe.
11 years.
He's in studio with us. You can check him out on Sirius XM NFL Radio.
So
from time to time. How often are you on there?
So during the season, I had a show called The Final Drive on Wednesday nights.
Okay.
It was 8 o'clock to 11 p.m. Pacific.
Pacific.
So I was the...
You're bringing in the morning.
I was bringing it in. But you know what? We had callers from all over the country that would call in. You know, usually a lot of truck drivers who are up late. But you'd be surprised. I mean, you know, New York, Florida, Atlanta. I mean, people from all over the place would call in. And, you know, you guys are the pros. I'm just a guy that's kind of lending a little bit of my time to the radio thing, but I did enjoy myself, and hopefully they'll have me back next season.
Well, you got the voice and the energy.
You sound good to us.
Yeah. So you got flagged, I presume fined, for somewhat famously doing a triple hip thrust celebration dance that was from a Key and Peele skit. And
Correct.
Then they wound up having you on?
Yes.
So was it worth it? What was the fine on that one?
So, I mean, a little bit of background. I mean, this is 2013 season. Key and Peele, I think they were in their third or fourth season. And, you know, I think, you know, 90% of the team were big fans of the guys. And, you know, the touchdown celebration sketch that they did, also kind of known as the three pump sketch, was something that... We talked about it in the locker room, Kenny Stills and I. We talked about it, but we never said, hey, in this game, if one of us scores, we're going to do it. And it was kind of scripted, I guess, but it was never practiced. It was never anything that we were, you know, because as a you know, professional touchdown dancer myself, I like to practice my moves before I get on the field. I'm not going to make a fool of myself. I'm going to jump in front of a big mirror and make sure I look good doing what I do. So this one was kind of random when it happened against Tampa Bay Buccaneers. We're at home and I catch a touchdown pass and literally Kenny's right there. And I'm like, wow, this is like, it happened so fast and so random. I'm like, I got to do it right now. And his reaction was just perfect because he became the official. I was obviously the player that was doing the celebration. I did the three pumps. He pulls his towel out and throws it as a flag. And back in those days, there was no such thing, or actually there was, but there was no such thing as a legal choreographed celebration. So obviously we get fined or we get flagged. It's a 15-yard penalty, unsportsmanlike, and we get to the sideline. Sean Payton's yelling at us and cussing at us. Don't do that. You're hurting the team. But we get to the sideline and we're like, yeah, that was pretty cool.
What was the fine on that?
$7,800.
And what you said that was made it sound like that was pennies compared to your worst.
Well, I mean, definitely not pennies, right. but the worst one for sure, 2008, the Saints were playing against the Chargers in London. And, you know, I'm a guy that does a little bit of research and knows about history. And I figured we're in London, England. I mean, you know, this is one of the soccer capitals of the world. So if and when I score a touchdown, I'm going to do a soccer slide. So back then, I didn't know all the celebration rules. So I just figured I'd do a soccer slide and go onto the sideline. And it was the same thing. I do a soccer slide. I get flagged because apparently, well, now I know. But back then, I did not know that you could not go to the ground on a touchdown celebration. So we get back to the States. We get to New Orleans. We're off a couple of days. We get back in the locker room and I have a FedEx envelope sitting in my locker. And I open it up and it's from the NFL, obviously. $10,000 for doing a soccer slide in England. So I thought there'd be like
paying
a little
tribute to your host.
I was paying tribute. I thought there'd be some sort of leniency or something because I was kind of paying homage.
Diplomatic immunity. I could have claimed.
I'm sure the Brits loved it.
They loved it. They went crazy. And like I went back this last season as like the NFL Saints ambassador because the Saints were playing over there against the Dolphins, and I would say at least 100 people said, hey, I still remember that soccer slide you did in Wembley Stadium. I still remember. That was awesome. And like, yeah, I mean, it was cool. That one, I don't know if it was worth it as much as the Key and Peele, because the Key and Peele obviously parlayed to a little bit of communication on social media. One of my buddies is friends with one of their producers, and they said, hey, we'd love to have him come on the set. And then one of the guys was like, no, we don't want him on the set. We want him to actually be in the show. And it started out as me just being in a random sketch with no speaking lines or anything, just kind of making a cameo. And then my buddy said, is there any way that we can get this guy some lines? And so I've been in commercials, little small tiny commercials and some things in local media, you know, but I've never done a national television, like big time, one of the top rated shows at the time, one of the top rated sketch comedy shows of all time. So, you know, I'm a football guy. I play football in front of millions of people. I can go out in front of 100,000 people and catch balls and do my thing. But just going through my lines with Jordan and Key, I mean, it was like my hands were shaking. I'm holding my paper with the script and my hands are shaking. They're like, just take a breath, take your time, and we'll get through it. And they were just so cool and so down to earth. And the very first time we read through our lines, like Jordan Peele said, stop. And everybody's like, uh-oh. And I had just said one line. And they're like, and he's like, thank God Lance Moore can act. And at that moment, I was like, okay, I'm going to be fine. You know, I was still nervous the entire time, but it just, him kind of giving me that stamp of approval almost, whereas he could tell that I was nervous. I was nervous just meeting the guys. I mean, I'm not a guy that's easily starstruck, but seeing these guys, they're great at what they do, and getting an opportunity to work with them 100%, I would do it 10 times again if I had to pay the fine just to be around those guys.
Could you have predicted Jordan Peele blowing up the way he has? He's Oscar nominated now.
I could, because just working with those guys that one day, I mean, they're brilliant. And they shot a whole season in like 2 weeks. So all of those sketches and all those shows, they do in 10 days. And so we'd be in the van, and my sketch, we're in a van and we're going through our lines, and you know, you do it a bunch of times throughout the day, but if we're on a break, these guys will be rehearsing their other sketches in between the main sketches that we're on, and every single time they're hilarious. But if there's one tiny thing that they could change to make that sketch better, they say, hey, instead of saying this, let's say that. And they run through it, and everybody in the van will be dying laughing, because they're literally brilliant. They're so witty and so sharp and so smart. It doesn't surprise me. And I think that where he's at now, he's only going to get bigger and bigger and bigger because he is such a brilliant mind.
He just had a series picked up by Amazon, by the way. Oh. This was just a couple days ago, about Nazi hunters that he's written.
It's
not just comedy with this guy. Yep. Get Out was what he wrote in his original screenplay, and it's really good.
Lance Moore is in studio with us. You know new Titans head coach Mike Vrabel fairly well. You were in business with him at one point.
We were. We owned a gym together in Columbus, Ohio, and I have spent, you know, quite a bit of time with him, and kind of, he was an older player than me. I mean, we kind of overlapped a little bit, but, you know, being a guy from Columbus, Ohio, I watched him at Ohio State, and then obviously, you know, he went on to have great success in the NFL, especially with the New England Patriots, and he's a guy that's kind of adapted that Patriot way. And I would assume, I mean, you guys would know better than me, but I would assume he's kind of put a lot of those principles that type of mentality, and try to establish that type of culture here with the Titans. And, you know, if there's a guy that could probably get a little more out of these guys and potentially get them over the hump, to get them back in the playoffs, to get them competing for division championships every single year, I think that he's the guy. I mean, he's a great football mind. He's not just a meathead football player turned coach. I mean, I think he's definitely sharp and bright in between the years, and he knows what he's talking about. I mean, it wouldn't happen for a guy to elevate in the coaching ranks the way that he has if he wasn't sharp.
What was the name of the gym?
D1. D1 is a Tennessee company.
Will Bartholomew. Yeah. They're all over the place. Here. Peyton Manning owns a few too.
Yes, he does. Yeah, I mean, and it was a great opportunity back then, and I'm no longer with the company, just, you know, for full disclosure, but, you know, just to be a part of that with him and a couple of other guys, it was a cool thing. I mean, a cool place to come back to. Had a bunch of great athletes come in through there, whether they're, you know, full-time Columbus people or people just coming in to get a workout. But yeah, I mean, he's an awesome guy.
You know, you hear all the time, boy, I knew he was going to be a coach the moment I met him or the moment I spoke to him. I mean, I talked to you and I think you could be a great coach also if you wanted to do that. Can you really tell when you know someone and you meet them that this person is going to be a great head coach one day?
Well, I mean, the head coaching thing, I think it takes a special personality. I don't think it's for everybody. For him, you could tell. I mean, he's got that type of personality to be a great head coach. I think when you're talking position coaches and maybe even sometimes coordinators, you don't necessarily need that same type of personality. But head coaches, I think a lot of times you can tell. You know, you definitely don't want a head coach that's very subdued and low energy. You want somebody that's going to be very confident. You want somebody that's going to be upbeat and be able to communicate with his players. And that's how you get the best reaction and energy back from them. I mean, if I'm speaking with enthusiasm and energy, I would expect you to perform that same way. If that's how I choose to instruct you, if I'm a coach that's always walking around or looking like or speaking as if I'm tired, you're usually not going to get the best. I mean, it's, you know, the best motivators, I feel, are the people that know what it takes to motivate people, and being very, very introverted and relaxed is usually not the way to get the best out of people.
Lance Moore, former NFL wideout, in studio with us. You were undrafted out of Toledo. You initially start as an undrafted with Cleveland.
Yep.
And then you end up in New Orleans.
Yep.
What was it about the fit within the Saints offense that you were not able to find in Cleveland when you first started there?
Well, I mean, and just coming out of college, I had a shoulder surgery, and, you know, I went from, you know, being a mid-round pick to an undrafted guy. Had a couple of teams call late in the draft and say, hey, we're going to pick you up in the fifth, sixth, or seventh round. It didn't happen, obviously. And, you know, I mean, just like anybody else who goes undrafted, your agent is fielding calls right away at the end of the draft and as soon as the draft is over. And we chose Cleveland, and being an Ohio guy, yeah, it was a pretty cool thing for me. I mean, I grew up in Columbus, go to school in Toledo, start my career with the Browns in Cleveland. So that was a pretty cool deal. You know, I was just a young guy trying to figure out if I belonged, and worked as hard as I could, and didn't really get a whole lot of opportunity. I mean, I made plays in training camp. I made plays in mini camp and OTAs in the off season. And we got in those preseason games. And I mean, shoot, I played in three preseason games. I played a total of 11 plays, and not really knowing much about the NFL game, I'm thinking, well, maybe they'll put me on the practice squad, come in for work after that third preseason game. And they're like, Coach Cornell would like to see you. You need to bring your playbook. And I kind of got it. I mean, I knew that I wasn't playing a whole lot. There was other guys that were, you know, rookies that were playing a whole lot more than me, which gives them a better opportunity to evaluate. But Coach Cornell said, hey, we'd love for you to stick around. We're going to try to get you on our practice squad. The reason why you weren't playing a lot is because we didn't want a lot of teams to be able to see you. I said, okay, cool. But I said, I'm from Columbus. It's down the road. I'm just going to go home. I'm not going to stay in Cleveland at this Town Place Suites that you have us all set in.
You didn't wait around.
Yeah, I didn't wait around. And thank goodness I didn't wait around, because I never heard back from the Browns ever again after that. So I had to make the decision, okay, what now? You know, what am I going to do? Am I going to just sit at home in Columbus and wait for my agent to say, hey, this team wants to bring you in for a workout, or this team wants to sign you to their practice squad? So I went back to school to Toledo. I wanted to try to finish up my degree. And while I was doing that, I was helping volunteer coach and you know, still working out and training, hoping that somebody was going to call. The Toronto Argonauts from the CFL called and said, hey, we've got your rights. If you want to come up here, we're ready for you. Because, you know, at that time, the CFL is already in the season. There is no camp at the same time as ours, because they're getting ready to start camp like next week. So for me, I was just kind of, I'm going to wait, coach. You know, I appreciate it. I'm going to sit tight and see if I get another opportunity. And we were playing, Toledo was playing out in Fresno, California, against Fresno State on a Tuesday night. We flew Monday night. And as soon as we landed, one of my coaches said, hey, have you talked to your mom? I'm like, have I talked to my mom? I'm like, no, I've been on an airplane with you for the last 4 hours. He's like, have you talked to your agent? I'm like, no. I'm like, what's going on? He's like, just call your mom, call your agent. So I called. My agent says, hey, man, the Saints want to bring you in. And obviously, this is Hurricane Katrina year 2005. So Saints were in San Antonio. He says, you've got a flight at 5 a.m. to go to San Antonio tomorrow to sign to the Saints practice squad. I was like, wow, that's awesome. And back then, Jim Haslett was the coach. You know, they were displaced. And I called our team the Bad News Bears, because we were literally like the stepchild of the NFL. You know, just high school stadium to practice in, no facilities. You know, no hot tub, no cold tub. Like, it was literally like, you know, you rewound time, and that was, they put us back, you know, 30 years. That was where we were. And once Haslett got fired, they brought Sean Payton in. And the first thing I hear from him was NFL Europe. So I'm like, man, these guys want to ship me out of here. They don't even want to see me. You know, I didn't play in any games in 2005, so they don't know who the heck I am. So I told my agent, nah, I don't really want to go to Germany. And he's like, hey, man, this is a new staff. I think you should probably do what they want you to do. And end up going to Germany, you know, hurting my thumb, coming back. I was in Birmingham, Alabama, waiting to get back to New Orleans so I can finish offseason workouts. and busted my butt. And I knew that if they kept me around, as soon as my opportunity came, I was going to make the most of it. And I did in the preseason that year and ended up in New Orleans for 9 years.
Yeah.
So it was kind of crazy.
Were you there for the return to New Orleans on that Monday Night Football game? What was that atmosphere like that night?
Well, I'm getting goosebumps right now just thinking about it because I played in the Super Bowl, and the Super Bowl was awesome. And every single play, you feel like whatever team has the ball is the home team. Whereas a home game, you know, obviously only the home team is going to get most of those cheers. When we opened that dome, it was like a rock star type event. I mean, it wasn't just a football game. There was a million celebrities on the side. I mean, the sideline, we couldn't even go out of bounds and before the game because you'd run into somebody. Usher, Little John. I mean, we're playing Atlanta Falcons, so they brought like their whole city, and it was electric. From the moment we walked out for warmups till the last whistle of that game, it was an electric atmosphere. And you can imagine, I mean, what all those people went through just to get back in their home. You know, the dome is the Saints and the city of New Orleans. That is their home. To get back in there, it was awesome. And you know, to kick the Falcons' butt, obviously, was definitely
had to win.
It was the icing on the cake. Yeah, I mean, and little do most people know, I was actually the punt returner on that punt that Steve Gleason blocked to open up the scoring for us back then.
That's cool.
Yep.
Wow. Hey, Super Bowl swung on that onside kick.
For sure.
Tell us about the locker room. Was it discussed in the locker room, or was it not called until you were on the field? What was your vantage point on it? And how much did you guys, before you recovered it, relish the idea that Peyton was going for it in that way?
Well, ambush was a play that we worked on all year. And we hadn't run that play since the year before, and we executed a little bit differently. So it wasn't like it was something that was on tape that they had to prepare for really, you know, a lot. But we, in the playoffs, he said he put in a couple different type trick plays. He's like, we're going to run these. And then leading up to the Super Bowl, he's like, we might need the ambush. We get in for halftime, and he knows that, you know, momentum is not necessarily on our side. Peyton Manning is really up and down the field on us, and he knew we needed something to kind of give us a little bit of a spark. And as soon as he walked in, he said, we're running ambush. And everybody kind of like perked up, like, okay. Like he really is in this to win.
You had 25 minutes to contemplate that with the long halftime.
Yep, for sure. But it wasn't like, you know, 25 minutes we're shaking in our boots. It was like, let's go. Like, you know, get us back on the field now so we can go run this, so we can go win this game. And thankfully for us, it worked out in our favor. And it was crazy, you know, the pile up and trying to figure out who had the ball. But yeah, I mean, he came in and he was confident in it. And I think that kind of put the, you know, confidence in all the guys that had to go out there and actually execute the play. And yeah, I mean, I can sit here and tell you, I don't think we win that Super Bowl if we don't go out there and do the ambush and recover that onside kick. So, you know, it takes a certain type of coach to call that type of play at that moment and, you know, that big of a stage. So, definitely a credit to him and having the confidence in us to be able to go out and execute.
Your bio mentions Atlanta as a team you were with in 2016. So when you came in, I was like, hey, did you cross paths with Matt LaFleur in Atlanta? And you're like, well, for the 3 days I was there.
Yeah, really cross paths.
Yeah, right. Tell us about the strange weekend that was in Atlanta for you.
Yeah, I mean, you know, first of all, being a guy that played in New Orleans for 9 years, I mean, the Falcons, you know, obviously you don't like any of your divisional opponents, but the Falcons would be the team that we probably disliked the most. So that in itself was a little bit awkward for me, but just to have another opportunity to extend my career and play in a place with a great quarterback, Dan Quinn, who's an awesome coach, who really has the pulse of the guys and understands how to motivate. And you know, he's a guy that liked to have a young staff around him. I mean, and Matt LaFleur is one of those guys. And you could tell that he learned a ton from Kyle Shanahan, who is another brilliant football mind. But these guys are awesome at X's and O's. These guys are awesome at motivating. These guys are just, they know their stuff. And it's, you'd be surprised. You get certain places. I've been a one specific place, and I'm not going to say where it was and who the coach was, but they don't always know everything. You know, and some coaches just don't know what they don't know and they try to give you some sort of answer. I like the coach that if he doesn't know anything, he's open to asking questions or he's open for advice from other people. And I feel like Matt is one of those guys that if he doesn't know something, you know what, I don't know, but I'm going to find you the answer or I'm going to get it from somebody who could help me help you. You know, obviously, I didn't have a ton of interaction with him. He was a quarterback guy. He was in with Matt Ryan and those guys. So, but yeah, I get there. I work out. And, you know, normally in a receiver workout, they run you through a couple of drills. They let you warm up. Then you run, you know, 10, 12 routes. So I get there. We ran one drill and we ran four routes. And I think they knew at that time I was in good shape. Usually they see if you're in shape because 11-year veteran, they know I can still play football. I mean, it's not a matter of, well, can this guy catch? I mean, you can look at my bio and you can see how many catches I have. You know I can catch the football. So get there, get the contract worked out, end up signing. And, you know, a couple days in the meetings, just trying to learn a new playbook. You know, 2016 obviously would have been my fourth year in four teams because I was in Detroit the year before. I was in Pittsburgh the year before. Then obviously New Orleans the year there. I had a one-year-old or a daughter that was getting ready to turn one at the time. They were in California. And all these things just kind of were like, is my heart still in football the same way that it was the last 11 years. And I really had to sit and think about it. And it took me about a day. And then, you know, I only practiced one time there. And it didn't help that I didn't quite feel like myself yet. I was off of football for 7 months, 8 months at that point. So I called my wife and I said, who was my fiance at the time. I said, you know what, babe, I think I'm done. And she said, really? And I said, yeah. I said, I physically, I feel fine. But mentally, I don't feel like I'm all the way there like I need to be. And I was always a guy that kind of prided myself in playing for the right reasons. And I never wanted to, you know, steal an opportunity from a young guy that could potentially, it could have been his only opportunity. So I text Coach Quinn. I said, hey, I'd like to meet with you tomorrow morning. He said, yeah, sure. I'll be there at like 6:30 a.m. We sat down and I just, you know, I explained it to him. I said, hey, man, I'm you know, going through some things and I'm thinking that I'm not quite all the way there anymore. And he said, you know what? I respect the heck out of you for coming to me. I respect the heck out of you for offering up an opportunity possibly for somebody that wouldn't get one or, you know, it's, if I was there taking reps from somebody and then I end up playing and I'm still not really quite into it, I mean, I would feel awful about that, you know, just playing for a check. I never wanted to do that. You know, maybe my wife would kick me in the butt about it, but, no, man. I mean, she was on board and she's awesome about, you know, just making sure that I kind of do what I want to do and what I feel is right.
And you stayed in shape for those 7 months. It's impressive that they knew you were in shape right away.
Yeah. I mean, that was not easy. I mean, I was in NorCal. We had just moved up there and I was kind of by myself. I trained by myself. I ran routes on air. I didn't even have a quarterback. So just to get back out there to you know, throw at these guys that have been in ball the whole time, it took a few catches for me to be like, okay, I'm good, you know, but, you know, staying in shape and, you're a creature of habit when you're in the professional sports, but especially in the NFL, because it's all year round. So, you know, whether I was on a roster or not, whether I was in OTAs or mini camp or not, I still had to make sure that my body was ready for training camp.
Lance, as you train receivers this weekend and throughout these camps with George Whitfield, is there a fundamental flaw that is most common with the position that you're constantly evaluating or trying to get that player over the hump with?
I wouldn't say there's one specific fundamental flaw, but I would say that I think the level of coaching has changed as far as youth football goes, as far as high school football goes, and guys aren't as fundamentally sound, I think, as they were back in the day. And I don't know if that's the level of coaches, you know, not being as high. I don't know if that's these coaches who are more interested in W's than they are actually getting these guys prepared to play. But I just think the fundamentals, I mean, the very, very basics, that your stance and your start, something as simple as coming off the football. I mean, it's something that, you know, most people don't think about. I mean, a receiver stance is important. Where's the weight? Where is your weight in your stance? Is your weight on your heels? Is your weight on the balls of your feet? How far spread is your stance? Are you in a natural position? Is your front knee bent? I have college guys here this week, and the very first thing that I said to one of the guys, and I don't want to put him on blast, but I said, bend your front knee. And he kind of looked at me and I said, okay, let's break it down. I said, I'm standing straight up and down. I've got about 2 feet in between my feet and the quarterback hikes the ball. Or he says, go. What's the first thing I have to do to run?
Bend your knee.
You got to bend your front knee. I said, then let's do it. And just something that's just as simple as that, where I can guarantee you this weekend when we've got these kids that come in, I would say about half of them won't do it. And I'll say, hey, and I'll give them the same example that I give these college guys, that some of them could potentially be NFL players someday. Hey, let's just bend that front knee. It's something so simple and so easy, but if you've never been taught it, which I think a lot of kids aren't taught something that simple, you don't know any better. So it just little things like that that can go a long way as far as, you know, helping to become a more complete receiver. I mean, I wouldn't say there's one specific thing, but I think there's a lot of little things that you can tweak with guys. And I like to watch guys. I watch them. I give instruction after I see what they need to work on. I'm not opening up a drill and saying, this is why we're doing this drill. No, I'll say, this is the drill. And I watch them do it a time. And then I break them down. I say, okay, we could probably get better if we do this. And that, I feel like that's been good for me coaching younger guys. Now, it's different if I'm coaching NFL guys that know the drills, that know the stuff. Then it's a little bit harder for me to find the specific things that these guys need to improve on. But the young guys, it's usually pretty easy.
Lance Moore has been our guest. You can follow him on Twitter at LanceMoore16. Great follow there. And so many other topics we could hit on with the fundamentals of just the position in itself. Maybe we can connect down the road with you some point.
Really enjoy it. Thanks
great. Very much.
And Chad and I will see you on Sunday.
Awesome. Yeah. Awesome. You can make fun of us.
Can't wait. Maybe we will get you over in some receiver drills, because this isn't just a quarterback camp. This is a quarterback / skill.
Yeah, these
camp.
Guys are prima donnas, though. If I was there,
do
I'd
you
be
guys
a receiver.
Have cleats?
Yeah,
awesome. Oh, yeah, well, you're ready then. You're ready.
You can catch a pass from us and then make fun of our velocity or lack thereof when you catch it. How about that?
Chad's very good at pump faking. Look out for that.
Oh, yeah.
Lance,
yeah.
Chad, on the pump fake. Chad and I have cleats from playing kickball.
Yes, yeah. That's our level of
rec
cleat.
League kickball.
I understand that, but that to me tells me that you're committed. So if you're committed to getting the most out of kickball, then you'll be committed to getting the most out of what we've got for you this weekend.
That's a good positive spin.
Thank you for coming in. This has been awesome.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Lance Moore has been our guest in studio. Again, follow him on Twitter at LanceMoore16. A Moment's Peace Salon and Day Spa, Chad, is the place to turn for the one or ones you love. They have something for the wife, the girlfriend, the mother, the mother-in-law, the grandmother, something for everyone.
And guys out there are so bad about getting the wrong gift, getting the wrong size of something. We're going to make it really easy on you right now. Just go and get a gift card to A Moment's Peace Salon and Day Spa, because you're going to give the gift of relaxation, but you're also giving the gift of choice, because, Hutton, as you know, there are so many different services to choose from at A Moment's Peace.
Massages, manicures, pedicures, facials, salon and boutique specials, and much, much more. She wants it, needs it. She'll love you for it, and it's hassle-free. Take it from me and Chad. You can't go wrong with A Moment's Peace Salon and Day Spa. 9050 Carruthers Parkway in Franklin is their address. Their phone number, 615-224-0770. 224-0770. And the one thing to remember with them, you can visit them online, print off gift certificates of any increment that you would like. Do that from the office right now at amomentspeace.com.